computer.
Amazing. So yesterday I figured out how to live stream, and today I've even brought a guest in. So good morning, Anna. This is being live streamed into our private Facebook group, and it will be on the podcast too. So lots of you might recognize Anna's face, but you're probably more likely to recognize her as the poster of incredible rainbows of food. So hello, good morning, Anna.
Morning. Good morning, West Beach. Hello.
It's lovely to actually, maybe this will be nice to get more of you in. If anyone thinks, oh, I'd quite like to come and chat about my experience of being a challenger, then yeah, let me know. But basically, Anna, maybe if we can do a little rewind, we did a podcast before, but maybe just talk to us about what's happened with you kind of this year, up until maybe sort of starting the 6 week reset, kind of what's your journey been?
This year was a year I decided to make some changes. I had lost my way. My relationship with food and movement was poor. I didn't even think I could do training because I just felt so rotten. So I did a walking challenge in March, to get myself moving. It was like 90 miles from McMillan or something. And then you had a 2 week free reset going at the beginning of April. So I jumped onto that with some, I needed a push. My friend Sam, who's a West Beacher, really had to encourage me to just try it. I promise you, you won't look back. So I did the 2 week free reset and she was right. So I jumped onto the 6 week reset that started immediately after. Here I am 5 months later.
Yeah.
Living my best West Beach life.
And I suppose what I wanted and what I thought would be really interesting is because you are 5 months in, and I think people imagine it's going to be linear, and there's new resetters who are in the group who are probably listening to this, and I love week one. I mean, I'm not going to like dampen that buzz for anything in the world, but I wanted to bring you back because I thought it would be so interesting to kind of talk about like what happens after like the 6 weeks, because in a nutshell, I mean, since you've been with me, Anna, and I know we're not putting any value onto scale weight, but I know for health reasons, you want to fit into that kind of like healthy BMI, even though BMI isn't a fantastic measure of health, etc. But you've lost a couple of stone, which is incredible. But it hasn't been linear. And maybe I'll switch back to you just to kind of explore that a little bit more, because I think people get these like motivational dips or they feel like they've fallen off track, and you're still here 5 months later. So what happened?
So the 6 week reset was just the best thing I've ever done, ever. And I would do it again happily, and I probably will do it again in the future because I think it's really important to reset. Before West Beach, I've done loads of things for a month or 6 weeks or 8 weeks. You do these things, but then at the end of them, then what? You know, you might cut sugar for 6 weeks, or you might run 5K a day for 6 weeks. You know, these challenges, these things you can dip in and out of. It's not a lifestyle. So I did my 6 week reset. I learned so much about myself. I think, you know, the ingredients to living a long, healthful life in a leaner, stronger body. You know, I learned how to do it, you know, how to plate my food, how to journal properly, you know, how to make stuff happen. And in the reset, there is this massive buzz. It's your main focus in life. When you're doing a reset, that is the most important thing you are doing right now. Mm-hmm. Motivation is so high, and you can't wait to see how you feel in 6 weeks time, which is amazing. You feel like a queen. But obviously after 6 weeks, normally in life pre-West Beach, that would be it. You then kind of just somehow end up falling back into old behaviors and ways of living and end up undoing all the hard work you've done anyway. But a lot of the mindset, you know, work I did in the reset led me to realize post reset, this is something I'm going to have to work out for the rest of my life. This is not a quick fix. It's not a diet. There's nothing yo-yo about this. This isn't, you know, that I have learned that I need to treat myself with love and put into action really positive behaviors and learn to prioritize myself on a long-term basis to get what I want. And I think as well, after the reset, all of a sudden, the reset is finished. It's not the most important thing in your life, I know. And other things creep back in and, you know, we're all busy. We have children, work, we have life, it happens. It's not always easy to get it right every single day. So I think my motivational dip happened when other things sort of crept back in and I would miss a training session or I would eat something on the go that wasn't protein centric. And then I very quickly started thinking, oh my God, I'm losing it. When really there was nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. Something happened psychologically and I thought, I'm messing this up. And I just put myself off.
Yeah, and I suppose for you, like, it was a stuck kind of narrative, wasn't it? Because you did, just to be clear to everyone, Anna didn't go anywhere. She did graduate, but we didn't carry on having like the one-to-one check-in. So you have the kind of wider group support, but you didn't have me like you have in that initial 6 weeks, kind of like properly in your team. Obviously, you can decide to do that if you're listening and you graduate. I can stay with your check-ins, etc. But, you know, Anna, you were flying. And actually, I remember when you sort of goal set. So when you finished the 6 week reset, you sent me back, like, because you were loving it so much. And I would say sometimes those people who have maybe had kind of issues around emotionally eating, sometimes you can just switch your focus and become a bit addicted to kind of movement and, you know, being perfect with your new kind of like health seeking behaviors. And it can almost just sort of switch across. And there isn't flexibility and there is quite a bit of rigidity. So as soon as like something like you're saying, you know, it wasn't top of the pile anymore, like life happened, stress has happened. I know you're like a single mom and you're working, you know, you probably felt like the foundation was maybe stronger than it was. And then you kind of hadn't fully believed that you're this type of person that doesn't swing and yo-yo, and you've got this baggage of, oh, I've done this before. I'm just repeating an old pattern of behavior.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was around about my motivational dip time, though, that you did a podcast with someone else. Who was it? You spoke about motivation.
Maybe.
I can't.
I think so.
I think what
you're actually, it might have been inspired by you actually, Anna, that one, because I do obviously, I think the other amazing thing that you did, and if you do work with me, I don't mind if I don't even do your one-to-one check-ins. If you are struggling, if you are in the kind of, you know, if you're just wondering how to get back into action, you can always reach me on the app. Like, there's just a chat function. Yeah. And you did send me this long message.
Yeah, I say, you know, and I think because I don't want, like, I don't want to live how I used to live. I don't want to do the behaviors I used to do. I know what I want, but I'm also human, so I can't get it right all of the time. And I think it is the perfectionist mindset, which is one of the most unhelpful things in the world. Mm-hmm. That's what makes me sometimes, that's where I come unstuck. Because I feel like if I, you know, write my wonderful plan, not all the time, by the way, I don't feel like this all of the time. This is like mainly in my motivational dip. Yeah. I feel like doing everything I've written down and said I'm going to do, that I, you know, I was feeling like I failed this week. It's really hard to get going the next week. Yeah. But what it takes is to do one thing once and I just feel great. This, you know, all it takes is to do one workout, even 10 minutes of exercise or 20 minutes of exercise. You immediately just feel great again. So,
and I think we overthink about it. I did quickly go live in the group yesterday and didn't press record, but I think we think we over kind of think the process of getting restarted again. Like, we're like, oh my God, like, it's going to be so huge to shift back to that being that person that I do prefer, because it's all about identity-based habit change as well. And you start re-identifying as, oh, you know, I am the type of person who, you know, I do things, I give it 100%, and then I kind of fall off, and then I'll probably jump back on, and then I'll fall off, and then I jump back on. And you have to start believing that you're not that person anymore, and that your new kind of way of being is, oh, actually, I'm a person who's much more compassionate. I know that the best way to kind of get back my mojo is just to do, but imperfectly do. And for so many women that I work with, I think you need to start describing yourself as like that you're a recovering perfectionist. So actually, you might have been all or nothing before, but it wasn't serving you. Like, actually, being perceived as outwardly perfect. Now, that's what I was going to say about your check-in for your goals for the next 6 weeks. They were so overreaching because you were like, oh, you know, not, you were way exceeding what I would say is kind of like a baseline to keep kind of in a healthy body. You were wanting to do like, oh, maybe I'll up it to 4 workouts, and maybe I'll grab in some Pilates, and maybe I'll get in some mobility, and maybe I'll shift up my steps, and
like almost addicted to it. Like I was on such a high and such a buzz, and I just wanted more and more and more and more and more until I crashed. Yeah. When actually, yes, slow and steady and consistent action,
yeah,
with plenty of rest time and plenty of time in between to live life,
yes,
and have fun and do minority things that we all love to do as well,
with no guilt,
with no guilt
and compassion.
Yes, self-love.
But it's really tricky, and it is a practice. And I think the more, because I think outwardly it can be like, and particularly when you're in kind of like a group mentoring program, like you guys go on when you're in the 6 week reset, there is this, and it's lovely because actually it's much easier to embed habits when people around you are also striving for those same behaviors, because it normalizes it. And you've, you know, you've got this amazing support system, but also it might feed a little bit of that, oh, let me be perfect with my breakfast. And, you know, I'm probably as guilty of it as anyone. I probably need to post up more of, you know, here's the wine and oh, here was the pizza. And actually my goal around those things is guilt-free behavior, but it's not my majority, it's my minority. But as in, I think for all of us outwardly, what we're portraying can be sort of so perfect that as soon as we fall away from this kind of ridiculous ideal, like your ideal of what your physical activity, what you wanted it to be, what your goal was for it being, would probably mean turning up as a really rubbish mum, because you wouldn't have any time for Alfie. You'd be like, oh, mummy's just got to fit in her 8th workout of the week, and oh, mummy needs to like go and finish off like her 80,000 steps for the day. And I think that's why it's so important to kind of have this fundamental kind of, or basic minimum, like what's the basic minimum I'm going to do this week. And of course you can over exceed on it, but I think to be more realistic and be kinder and more gentle on yourself, yeah, is kind of a good tip.
I had and have more success on the weeks that I simply do 3 workouts, no less minutes, so between 30 minute and 50 minute workouts,
yeah,
just 3 a week. There's, you know, what, 45 minutes 3 times a week. I have more success on those weeks than when I try and squeeze in a 4th one or add in a mobility or, you know, whatever. It's, yeah, I overwhelm myself, and then it's just, you know, it's too much to live up to. Yeah. It's very simply, if I was to do 45 minutes on a Tuesday, Thursday and a Saturday, that's it. Somehow the rest of the week just happens anyway, because yeah, I've done, I feel fantastic that I've done it. But also, it's enough. It's enough to do 3 45 minute workouts in a week. My weights are heavier. You know, I started with 1 kilogram and 2 kilogram dumbbells. I've got a barbell now. You know,
it's, I know this. This is exciting for me. Amazing.
And this is, you know, this has happened gradually. So it doesn't have to be, you don't have to spend more time on it. I think workouts, you say, you know, you don't have to do more, just pick up something slightly heavier.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's about the volume that you're doing. So obviously if you're picking up a lightweight and you want to progress it, you've either got to get a heavier weight or you've got to do more reps of the same weight to get the same volume. Everyone knows I'm shit at maths, but basically if you did the maths and the load through your muscle, and that's all that training is. And I think sometimes, particularly maybe the women that are kind of drawn to work with me, you know, we're not avid gym goers. We're not maybe like super confident, like running into like the strength bit of a gym, but actually that's the beauty of working out in your own home. But then realizing that training is literally stimulating muscle to remind it that we need it. Cause we're all, after listening to that Dr. Chatterjee podcast, it's really long, but in a nutshell, he was basically just talking, or she was talking, the doctor on there, about the fact that as soon as you're over 30, you're catabolic. So you're losing muscle, and it doesn't have to be that way, but to be anabolic, you need to be meeting protein thresholds and you need to be resistance training and HIIT. And actually when I listened to it, I was like, I love the fact that the programming, all of the workouts that you have access to are, you know, whether you're using your body weight, whether you're picking up a dumbbell, a barbell, you know, you're stressing the muscle, which is incredible. You know, there's the HIIT stuff in there to stress your cardiovascular system. And obviously we get our protein seeking eyes on. So anyway, if you haven't got an hour and a half to listen, you guys are nailing it.
Everyone's nailing it.
I was going to say, like, maybe to talk a bit about the, so you had this dip, you reached out, how have things adjusted? Like, what tools are you having to use to kind of keep yourself going? Because it is, I think, like you say, everyone can imagine doing something for a week, 2 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever.
So it's one of the most important things, I think, is to normalize the fact that our food and our movement isn't always perfect. And when sometimes, I was saying to you earlier that sometimes I will do 20 minutes of a 40 minute workout, but I don't post my sweaty selfie because I feel almost embarrassed that I didn't finish that workout. I wonder if listening to this does the same, when actually, like, we need to be celebrating the fact we've just done 20 minutes of movement and not feeling bad that we didn't finish a workout and embarrassed to post a, you know, because we should share in all of those successes. I just wanted to in there quickly that
normalizing it, because I talk about it all the time, but your muscle doesn't really know what you're doing. It doesn't know that you're doing like strength in 40. What it knows, and the only thing it cares about, is at some point in this week, have you stressed your glutes? At some point in this week, have you stimulated and put your hamstrings under pressure, or your biceps, or your core muscles? Doesn't give a monkey's really, you know, how long you did it for. But what it needs is, it needs that reminder, like, don't break me down, I'm still using you. Don't break me down, I'm still using you. And the only two ways to do that is putting it under tension and stress, and obviously eating plenty of protein. Like, it's the only way to keep you, you know, in this amazingly more metabolic muscular body, which, again, in the podcast, they're talking about the fact that we're not over fat, we're under muscled. And if we all just started switching our attention to, you know, forget about fat loss, actually think about building muscle.
And just feeling stronger. So I feel like I'm more intuitive now than I've ever been. I can sometimes make the wrong choice, but on the whole, I make better choices. Is things that are that help me thrive and, you know, feel amazing. I'm learning to listen to my body more. I understand what my body needs. I understand my body's cues a bit more. The key to sort of getting out of the motivational dip was to try and accept it's a work in progress. It's a thing I have constantly, but to accept that I'm not a perfect person and that nobody is. The fact that I care, the fact I'm still working on it, the fact I'm conscious of moving my body more, just trying to get some training in, whatever that might look like, and being protein centric and eating rainbows and still enjoying the minority things without guilt. And just for me also being present in the West Beach community and seeking support from my peers is huge. The bingo buddies.
I was going to say, tell everyone who's listening. And again, if you're listening to what Anna's about to say, and I know I put a post up ages ago, I love linking you guys up. So you can either join these guys, or actually we can have like a rival bingo buddy gang. But some people I know just want to be left alone, and they love it, and they plod through the workouts, whatever they choose. But yeah, tell us about the bingo.
I will say, I do have weeks from time to time where I just want to focus on my own, even though I'm in. So I might dip out and do my own thing. So Bingo Buddies started because I think a few of us were in a bit of a slump. And I think things sometimes do work in cycles. Talking of cycles, my motivational dips and slumps are very often linked to where I am in my cycle, which is another thing I'm working on being more mindful of as well.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
Hey buddies, we sort of came together, a few of us, to support each other at a time at which I think we all felt like we wanted to be doing more. So there are four to five of us, and you know, from time to time, you know, we might dip out for a week or do our own thing. It's, you don't have to be in it constantly in action in the group, but basically we are more accountable to ourselves, and we want to work as a sort of a team to help each other get through our training goals for the week. Most weeks everyone is trying to do just to complete the bingo selection that you put up every Friday. But you know,
very quickly, if anyone's listening and you're not a challenger or you're in the new reset, bingo is where I just curate a list. It's always Thursday night strength training, and then I'll curate like two or three other kind of workouts for you just to tick off so you can shout bingo on a Friday,
which is amazing. But it does, again, but different things work for different people. So I have, ever since the reset, I've loved the weeks 1 to 6. I just love them. I'm trying them out, trying a heavier weight. Or I want to say as well, I keep talking a lot about how I use heavier weights now. Some days I do just go on body weight. I listen to my body. Sometimes I'm tired, but I still need to move. So I never push myself, you know, I listen to my body. I think that's another thing we need to normalize, is that even though we're capable of lifting heavy weights, sometimes we might not want to, and we've done less of a workout because we put our weights down.
Yeah, because just to remind you guys, all your body wants to know, and you can get the same stimulation response like either kind of back squatting like 30 kilograms or doing enough body weight squats to get to that point of fatigue. Like your butt doesn't care which way you got there. So just to remind yourself of that. And sometimes just kind of maintenance of kind of muscle mass becomes the goal as well. Like you might get into a body where you're like, actually, in which case you just need to stimulate it enough and feed it enough to kind of maintain. And really interestingly, just to kind of go back to what you were saying about cycle, do you think that's really important? And it might be that kind of week lead up to your period that you want to, you know, switch things around. You might want to go for more Pilates. You might want to go for yoga. You might prefer strength only rather than jumping. You might need the jumping. You might be feeling like, ugh. So again, I know there's loads of stuff buzzing around like social media about what you should do, but I don't think there's any hard and fast rules, because I think all of us experience those hormonal fluctuations differently. But normally I would say that kind of after your period's just finished, that first week might be where you're wanting to like push a little bit, might be where you're feeling like you can take on the world. And but noticing, because it might not be, but there's no right or wrong, you know, taking a week of mobility and Pilates is amazing, or yoga, or just thinking about stretching, because you can't, you know, there is no perfect pattern of movement. The perfect pattern of movement is what do you need that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something that I need to work on more. Mm-hmm. This is something I can add to my journal. Where am I in my cycle? How is that making me feel? What can I do today that will, I guess, best suit?
Sometimes you're feeling badass and you just want to pick up the heavy things. Yeah. Sometimes you want to have that kind of high that you get from high intensity interval training, of just kind of peaking your heart rate and that like endorphin rush afterwards. And it is just noticing what you need, because your body needs all of it. And like, I know you know, but more isn't more. And there is a massive law of diminishing returns. So, you know, the benefit you get from going from zero workouts, even to one workout, is massive. And maybe zero to three is incredible. And as soon as you've kind of hit three, you know, you're kind of like coming down until you're overtraining. And then there's no benefit, because your body, and I don't know if everybody, hopefully you know it if you're sort of, you've been around a little while, but your body is repairing and getting stronger on your rest days. So it's not getting stronger when you break down your lean tissue, like when you're tearing up your muscles, you know, that stimulation of the muscle, but it's on your rest days, on your nourishing days, or the week you decide to kind of dial back the training. It's actually then that you're going to be getting stronger, and you need to be focusing on your protein on those days, and, you know, still moving, still making sure you get, you know, your vitamin D, go out in the sunshine. But that thought that more is always better, and like lifting heavier and kind of, you know, like burning your body up basically, actually is just going to lead to injury. And it's going to mean that you can't train and do the things you love doing with your body. Yeah. So yeah, definitely remembering that.
And that is exactly what led me into my motivational dip in the first place.
I wanted injury.
Yeah, and then I burnt myself out. And I also, I sort of triggered an old lower back injury that I had just from childbirth, but it was a childbirth related. Sensitivity in my back, and that happened. When you push yourself too far, that's the law of
injury.
There's which is why for me the magic number is 3. Sometimes I might want to do 4, or number 4 could be a yoga or a Pilates or a mobility, just some stretching, or or something, you know, just number 4 could be something really gentle.
There's something about getting in your body, I always notice, and it doesn't massively matter how you get in your body, whether that is kind of like a bit of like foam rolling or whether it's like a little bit of gentle mobility. But I notice massively with the women that I'm coaching that there's a massive correlation between like starting your day with movement or having something that brings you back into your body. Because obviously, you know, I've taken hundreds of women through this now, but we're so busy externally judging our bodies, like looking in the mirror, pulling our bodies apart, and we are so good at living outside of our body. But what movement does, and particularly those practices like Pilates or yoga and strength training, I find it really pulls you into living in your body and thinking about what your body can do and what it is doing, rather than how does it look. And it's that that kind of shift in mindset towards like functionally, what is my body capable of? And then the respect it gives you for your body. I just love it.
This is a massive shift for me. This has happened for me. I, for the first time in my life since starting West Beach, I no longer care about how skinny I am or I'm not. That no longer is a goal for me. It no longer even exists in my realm of thinking. It matters not what dress size I am. All I'm, you know, while concerning myself with now is, you know, how strong can I feel? I love feeling strong. Everything. So it doesn't matter if I'm a size 10 or a size 20. No, obviously I want to be healthy, whatever that looks like for me. How strong do I feel? Because I could restrict, be aesthetically, you know, slim, but feel weak and tired and lethargic and miserable, having done all the wrong things to get there. I might never change dress size again from today, but my body might change and I might feel incredibly strong forevermore. I mean it is a delight, and I do feel myself becoming stronger. But physically, the more I do physically, the stronger I feel mentally, naturally in human, we go up and down a scale.
Of course, because it's so not linear. And I know your weight loss hasn't been linear. And I think that's the other thing we get, like, and I know you track a little bit because you've got this health goal of like, you know, and I get that you want your risk factors for certain kind of, you know, chronic diseases to come down. And a lot of that can be, you know, correlated with BMI, although to kind of holistically kind of step back, I love the fact that, you know, no matter what, no matter whether you lose a pound or whether you lose 10 or whether you stay exactly the same, what you're implementing, the lifestyle changes you've made, they are future-proofing you regardless of what scale weight says. The fact that you are, you know, cutting back on saturated fat, putting in more polyunsaturated, like internally, and I don't think people think about this enough. Like, again, we get very hung up on an aesthetic that we're after, but actually, like, deep dive into your arteries, like the fat around your liver, like the fat that's around your sort of middle organs, like the changes that might not be reflected in scale weight, but the changes that are happening in your actual physiological sort of functioning and what that infers for your future self is just phenomenal. And I think if we could just, and I know this is what you guys hopefully come to me for, is that kind of shift away from like scale weight and aesthetics, because, and as you're living proof, that kind of happens in the background.
It happens as a side effect of doing fantastic things for yourself, you know, and it's little things like, scale weight aside, I feel stronger. I consistently make better choices for me. That helps me love myself more. It boosts my self-esteem. My self-care and self-love includes things like bubble baths and herbal teas and booze-free weeks on end, and you know, all of the, you know, face masks, and all, you know, I know that I'm worth so much more than I was giving myself before. So it's more than just, you know, the eating, the movement, the training, doing all of those things makes me feel amazing. Yes, there are dips. The important thing is, it you know, I'm a work in progress. I might be a work in progress for a long time, but I'm making baby steps. And because I'm doing, because overall my majority behaviors, even with motivational dips, even with weeks where sometimes I've had weeks where I didn't even train, sometimes I've had weeks where I've been completely off, you know, the meal plan I had written down for myself. But because overall, most of the time I'm doing all of the right things for me, my, you know, yes, I have lost some weight, which isn't why I'm doing it. That's happened as a side effect for the amazing things. But also my resting heart rate has reduced by like 20 beats.
Has it? Oh my goodness, I didn't know that. Yeah, and what that means for the future, Anna. And actually, I know you've got Alfie who's tiny, like, you know, you want to be around for your grandkids and your great grandkids, and your resting heart rate is, you know, a good indication of how much a healthier sort of body you're living in.
Before, and now it's in like the late 60s. So
God, that's okay. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. So and that makes me feel better than any weight loss. I'm like, yes, my heart's happier.
And that means your arteries are happier and the flow of blood is less impeded and you're resting. Again, like blood pressure is an amazing measure of kind of like how well you're doing.
It's really good. It's really good now. What else? My sleep. I sleep so much better when I have eaten well and I'm full of nourishing, delicious, colourful things. And I've done some training and, you know, I've had my movement and I've had my fun. You know, I sleep so well. I'm averaging between, okay, so it's not always spot on because I do have a toddler who does like to climb in with me sometimes still, but we're talking anywhere between 6.5 to 8 hours sleep every night now. More nights undisturbed than disturbed now as well. So, you know, it's just fantastic.
And it does, it impacts on like every aspect. And I think that's kind of, I suppose what I like, I know I created it, but as in, I love the fact that it's just, you know, it's not a meal plan and it's not the exercise and it's not like it's everything kind of bundled together and the community, and the mindset's huge.
It's just for me, it's like the winning, it's like the sprinkle. It's like, you know, the cherry on top, the peer support, the community.
It's lovely. And I think the problem with things like Slimming World or, you know, you're not learning anything. You're not being taught anything. Like me telling you that, you know, some foods have so many points and other foods have so many other points doesn't teach you. And it doesn't give you the ability really to know how to nourish and feed yourself and thrive. Because still you're like giving these arbitrary good, bad titles to foods. And I think sometimes with these point systems, you actually would prioritize like a Freddo over an avocado. Because one would have more, like the avocado. I don't know if that's true because I've never really delved into it, but
calories. But just look at it, like it's common sense, isn't it? Of course, have a Freddo. But if you're looking to have less calories and you're eating chocolate over fruit, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes the health seeking behavior would be to have the Freddo. And I know for me, like I've worked the other way around where I have been too restrictive. So, you know, the other day I was driving to the airport and I was like, you know what? I'm not going to buy a protein bar. I'm going to buy a Boost. And I did it and I ate it while driving, but I really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, so whatever you perceive as being health seeking for you would depend on, and this is why I love working with women and coaching women, because I want you to bring all your like luggage. I want you to bring every single fatty diet you've ever done. And I want us to start, and I'm going to hopefully, if I've got time, do a podcast on this, but it's all about kind of looking at your diet history, about challenging your beliefs. Because, you know, once upon a time, we probably all believed in Father Christmas and we don't anymore. Well, I still do. It's probably a bad example. Tooth fairy. But as in, you have to do the same about these stuck beliefs that are just keeping you in these repetitive patterns. But Anna, what I wanted to do, we haven't spoken as much about the kind of emotional eating side. And if you're listening to this, I haven't sent it out to you guys yet, but there's a new members area and it makes working through the emotional eating journaling prompts much easier. So I will send it out today. I'll write a little note down. But tell me about, because again, I think people think they're going to do this piece of work. They're going to work through their emotional eating issues in 6 weeks and they'll never emotionally eat again. And like hand on heart, I emotionally eat. And I think we need to normalize it. I think we need to talk about it. So where are you in your relationship with food?
My relationship with food is, most of the time, I make delicious, nutritious, healthful, wholesome meals. I still binge, I'd say, or emotionally eat. I'm going to be brutally honest here, probably about once a week, actually. Yeah. And so I think, God, that was really hard for me to say, but I have to be honest, because if I'm not honest, other people will feel uncomfortable.
There's obviously, Anna already knows I'm obsessed by Brené Brown, but she actually says like the antidote to shame. So about like things that we feel shame around. So kind of shame around maybe not being good enough, or our diet not being good enough, or exercise not being good enough. So similar to not posting a photo of your face because you don't really feel like good enough. You feel a bit like a shame that you didn't finish it. The same would be true with kind of like emotionally eating, that you feel shame, so we don't talk about it. But actually, shame thrives on secrecy. And the sooner you talk about it, and the sooner we normalize it and bring it into conversation, like actually on a Friday night when I've had a shitty week or a really good week, because emotionally eating can be, I've had a great time this week and I'm going to celebrate, or I'm going out. You're still emotionally eating. You're being driven, not by physiological hunger, yeah, but like, you know, maybe it's a need for connection, but you're having a lovely time.
It stems from, it's a response to a heightened emotion, I guess, because yeah. Really, you know, it's Friday, I've had a great week, you know what, let's have a Prosecco. That, you know, that's kind of having a Prosecco because you're feeling great.
Yeah,
likewise, it could be, I've had an awful day, I'm just going to sit on the sofa and eat a whole packet of biscuits without thinking about it.
Yeah. And we were starting to talk about it, weren't we? Like things we can do, because it's fine to emotionally eat, but it can't be your only coping strategy. And so if you haven't worked through, I don't know if you've worked through the emotional eating journaling prompts yet, Anna.
No,
you don't have to have. I'm going to, so it's a PDF that's already dropped in your guys' app, but as of today, you all have access to the members space. And in the members space, it literally goes,
bells on.
Journal prompts podcast. You've probably maybe listened to the podcast, but it takes you through the steps to kind of start unpacking kind of like what your held beliefs are. But it also goes through strategies of the pause, because there's a massive difference. And Anna and I had a little chat beforehand. It doesn't really matter if the outcome is that you choose to emotionally eat or you choose not to. What matters is the fact that you've inserted a pause and you've made a decision.
Mm-hmm. And you're aware. You've realized what's going on.
You're curious about it, and you're compassionate about it. You're not like, oh my goodness, I'm a bad person. It's like, well, actually this behavior isn't great for me because this doesn't take me towards my goal. But you don't internalize it, you don't take that shame on. So she talks about, Brené talks about a bit of a difference between like shame and guilt. So kind of feeling guilty, a bit like, oopsie, kind of, you know, got this one goal, went off track, and feeling a bit guilty about a behavior is very different from feeling shame about a behavior. And, you know, having that ability to ideally have a pause and choose. So it's like, actually, I'm choosing to eat away from, you know, I'm not going to nudge in the direction I want to go with this next choice. I'm choosing a different value right now. I'm choosing the fact that this fudge cake is like freaking amazing, and I'm with my mate, we're having a lovely chat, I'm really enjoying it, and I'm choosing to take that pathway. Or, you know, choosing to have, you know, there's always the compromise, the in-betweeny bit, but it's the choice, it's the fact that you've made a conscious decision.
Even if that is a choice to do something, you know, isn't necessarily going to make you feel great afterwards, or isn't, you know,
because you pan out and you kind of like almost imagine that, like zooming out, and like, you know, your body composition doesn't give a shit about what you do once in a while. Like it, like you're living proof of this. Like if you're saying that you still have these sort of emotionally eating behaviors at least once a week.
Yeah, I'd say once a week I do have a moment, an episode, a spell where I'm not in control for a short time.
Yeah.
A very short time, a brief time, you know, or I do something consciously, I am in control, but I'm doing something that I know I might not necessarily, you know, thank myself for later, because it's kind of, because, you know, I can respond, it's just emotional stuff, isn't it? Just emotions. So that has still happened regularly, but I have still come so far this year, because that it's a minority behavior. So I'm talking, how many meals are there in a week? So there's 21 meals, 28 if you include a snack a day. So I might mess up like two or three times out of 28. The fact that the other 25 times I eat that week are fantastic, good for me, make me feel great. Like the majority, it's the majority action, the majority behavior is good for me. So I might plateau times. I might not have, I might not build more muscle 1 week. I might not lose any more fat 1 week, but I certainly have not been putting anything back on. You know, overall, I'm in loss, loss and muscle gain this year.
And I think, that's really helpful to kind of remember as well. Like, I think people get so hung up on the metrics of, oh my God, today I was like over my budget. And like, but it's like, well, actually, if you think about it, even if you were given like money and you were spending money every day, and some days you go out and spend loads of money, some days you, as long as you kind of come in on budget at the end of the week or the year or the month. And like, it is kind of thinking more about like, well, you know, if you're looking for maintenance, you need that balance to be exactly kind of sort of spot on-ish across a year or 2 years. And, you know, your body is a really good representation of how you're treating it over time, like much better than just kind of like micromanaging, like what's happening on the scales. Because we know as women, like the scales, I'm sure, like I haven't stood on scales. It was my old house. I reckon it's about 3 years now, and never happier not knowing. Like, it's so nice to start to be present and living in your body rather than judging it from an outdoor metric. But as in, the best representation of if you're kind of getting that balance of lifestyle and exercise and fitness right is how you're feeling in your body.
Yeah, exactly. Which is overall great.
It'd be really interesting when we come back, because I think if we're doing this at 5 months, maybe we should plan 10 months. And again, to revisit you doing the emotional work around eating. Because inserting that pause, and we talked about it and I went off track, but we talked about kind of noticing that desire to do the behavior, inserting that pause, journaling is really good. Because again, it takes out the shame. As soon as you write it down, you know, you just acknowledge it. It stops being secret. It stops being this kind of secret little narrative in your head that's kind of, you know, oh, you know, you always do that on a Friday, or go on, why don't you, you know, go and engage in that behavior you always do. That's the type of person you are. Inserting that pause, getting out your journal. I did encourage Anna to also get a high protein snack, or like a loving snack, something that feels quite nourishing whilst you're journaling. Set like a timer even for 30 minutes. Could you like literally, and it might be the timer initially has to be 5 minutes, and then maybe you can stretch it to 10 minutes. But I would say having something to kind of satiate hunger.
I might just try doing something else as well. Yeah. So acknowledging it, writing down, I think this might be about to happen. This is how I'm feeling right now. I'm happy to go out for a walk for 10 minutes.
Yeah. You know, because you've got your other self-soothing behaviors. You've got your bubble baths. You've got your, you know, cuddle with Alfie on the sofa for 5 minutes, doing some breath work.
I have a cupboard. I have a shelf dedicated to herbal tea. It's just the most incredible selection ever. I could stand there for 5 minutes reading, you know, looking through all of the teas and decide which flavor to have. Just something really that takes my mind off.
Yeah. And it's looking at your arousal state, because I know for me, like if I'm always trying to get away from something, like often it'll be some kind of like, I don't know, admin-y worky tasks that I just don't want to do that will kind of drive me into, oh, look at me, I'm in the kitchen. But actually you kind of have that kind of state of arousal as well. That's quite heightened, because it's almost like that, like anxiety, like, I'm going to. So even just to insert that pause and then just do really slow breathing. And in the strategies for emotional eating, it does talk about breath. It doesn't even matter what type of breathing you can do. You can do just slow in and out of your nose just for a minute, and then just bring that autonomic nervous system back down again. So you're not in that kind of fight or flight kind of anxious, kind of cramming things in, and then deciding, or even like taking that pause to decide, okay, I'm not eating because I'm hungry. I'm not eating because it's like time to have something that's got protein in it, but I'm going to really like find out what is it that I want. And I'm going to do some breath work, and then I'm going to go and create something that feels quite loving. And it can be anything. It might be that that's sticky toffee pudding and some custard, but like being mindful, like how much of that is loving, like loving me now, loving me later. And the more you can kind of consciously slow it all down and then be like, and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to enjoy it. Or I'm going to share it with, you know, Alfie. I'm going to sit down. We're going to plan it. We're going to look forward to it. So just taking that panic away, because I know for you, you've had a history of so much kind of restriction, banned foods, lack of permission and autonomy around food, like giving yourself back that autonomy. Like I can have whatever I want. Like you can go out and, you know, you could have 28 donuts. You could like lather them in ice cream and just knowing you've got that permission.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, I think, as well. I no longer have guilt about certain food types. I welcome all foods on my plate almost every day now. Cheese is my favourite thing in the whole world. I have cheese every day.
Nice. What's your favourite cheese, Anna?
Oh, I don't know. Have you had Brie de Meaux?
No.
Stinkiest cheese. It's a Brie. They come in a little... Aldi does it. Find a Brie de Meaux. Pardon?
Brie
de Meaux.
Send me a photo. Put a photo in the group. We all need to see this cheese.
It melts at room temperature and it stinks. It's just amazing. So that's a good cheese. I love Saniger. And you know you can get the creme. Yeah. Oh, I just love cheese. Amazing. So when I started West Beach, so I remember saying, I think I said to you, you know, it's talking about things I'd cut out and that I don't ever want to have to live a life without cheese. And you said to me, you don't have to. You can eat cheese. In fact, I encourage you to have cheese every day. And actually, is just a little sprinkle of cheese on a spaghetti bolognese for dinner. Nice. Whether it is a cheese and a cracker as part of my lunch, or you know,
it's really important. Like the only thing that shouldn't exist in your diet is food that you don't like or you're like literally like deadly allergic to. But as in, if the answer to do I enjoy that food, it's yes. Doesn't matter if it's Haribo donuts, like it has to be normalized because it's the restriction. And I think so often when we feel out of control, we want more restriction, and you need to actually reverse engineer it. There was too much restriction. The reason you restart your diet on a Monday or, you know, every single Monday is because your week is too restrictive. You need more. You need like, as actually I will, well, I'll just dribble it in, but at this conference there was a doctor in nutrition and he was just talking about the fact that, you know, often like the Western way of eating is that we have these tiny little carb loaded breakfasts and we start small and then we eat a bit more and then we eat a bit more for dinner and it's our largest meal and then we go on and eat in the evenings, whereas it would be much better. Because the reason like you're overeating in the evening is because you've undereaten during the day. So, and I know this is why I talk to you guys about plate methods, the importance of protein in the first meal of your day, is because you need your body to know that it's not being starved. But every single day, so many of us start with this like, you know, tiny little breakfast, great intentions, maybe a very like curated little tiny lunch. Whereas I prefer that you had three banging meals and a snack.
And if I've had a big breakfast, I have no issue. My ideal day would start with a workout and then a huge breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mine too. Yeah. Anna, I'm aware of the time and I'm aware that you have a coffee date with another challenger, which is lovely. So, I mean, if she arrives, we could just bring her into the live. Thank you so much for your time. I think it's really lovely and I really love that I've, you know, that we've selected one another for this. I mean, I'm so pleased she's here.
Yeah, Sam, come and say hello.
Come and say hello, Sam, and you can be in the podcast. What's she doing?
I can see coffee.
Hi, Sam. Hi, darling. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Yeah, we're good. We're just finishing up, so you can go enjoy your coffee. But thank you for bringing Anna in. And again, if any of you listening and you need friends to be brought in, like this is what the love is. So I don't know if you're listening, if you're not a challenger, and you're thinking this is the kind of thing I need more of, do reach out. I'm not sure exactly when the next reset's going to be, but do keep listening to the podcast. Like if you start at 3 to 7, like there's so much you can do just to start yourself off on this journey. Do message me, because again, I've got like free workout playlist, but ideally the one thing I need access to is your brain, and I need you to trust yourself. I need you to start trusting in the process and think about a different way, because if you're still listening to this looking for this kind of like magic pill solution that's really linear, and your, you know, fat loss is linear, and you know you're just going to feel motivated every day to work out, you're dreaming. And there, you know, it can be fun, it can be sustainable, and it can be a massive, you know, completely compatible with real life. But go and have your coffee before it's cold.
Oh.
Stay in touch. All right. Oh. All the love to you, my darling, and Sam. Bye.
Bye.